Good morning, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. We do not have a quorum, so we're not going to formally move the bill that's on the agenda and the delete all amendment until a quorum is present. But in the meantime, we'll begin with Mr. Crow and or Mr. Strom to do a brief walkthrough of the DE5 amendment. Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll start with the spreadsheet. You have a one-page sheet on letter paper that shows the appropriations changes that are in the bill. You're probably used to seeing this this spreadsheet. There's a column on the far right and the fifth column from the right that say House minus base, and those kind of show you the differences from base for the bill. You can ignore the House minus governor column. The changes that are made in this bill that have appropriations effect include the early graduation achievement changes, which reduce state spending in general education in the 12-13 biennium by $779,000, and the post-secondary enrollment option changes, which reduce spending by $230,000. And then there is a grant for the Bemidji School District of $250,000 that's listed on this spreadsheet. There are levy impacts from the fewer students in the system due to early graduation and the PSEO changes. Those levies changes are listed on lines 19 through 34. And as you all know, we're already paying levies for fiscal 12 and 13, so any adjustments related to these years are in the fiscal 14 column. That's why those amounts are a little bigger than the amounts in fiscal 15.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, Ms. Larson and I will go through the bill with you. The summary is in your packet, and the document that we'll be discussing is House File 2949, the DE5 delete all amendment to that document. That's what the bill summary in front of you is drafted to. The first three provisions of the bill, sections 1, 2, and 3, deal with the early graduation program that was passed last session. These changes were also in language, generally speaking, language recommended by the governor. In Section 1, essentially what's happening here is the early graduates no longer generate general education revenue for their school once they've graduated early. And this is essentially what creates the fiscal savings that shows on the spreadsheet that Mr. Crow just mentioned. Section 2 clarifies a number of requirements for the early graduation program, and there are some slight changes from the, particularly in the timelines from the language the governor recommended on this. Essentially what happens is that the a student is required to choose either the early graduation scholarship or the early graduation military service award. They've got to choose one or the other. Then the language clarifies that the eligible student at the time of graduation had to have been enrolled in a Minnesota public school and was generating general education aid at that time. Additionally, the student needs to graduate within the fourth year after first enrolling in ninth grade in order to be considered an early graduate. The dates that are changed requires the student to apply for the scholarship money within two calendar years of the date of graduation. In the governor's recommendation, that was 1 year, and then requires the scholarship to be used within 6 years of the student's graduation. That's a longer time frame as well. One other provision not changed in House File 2949, in the governor's language, it was recommended that the achievement scholarship be used only at a Minnesota institution of higher learning. In Section 3, the Early Graduation Military Service Program, similar kinds of changes are made. Again, it clarifies that a student that graduates early chooses either the Achievement Scholarship or the Military Service Award Program. Again, the same requirements that the student be enrolled in a public school in Minnesota, was generating general education aid, and graduated prior to the fourth year of school after enrolling. Those requirements are essentially are the same for those two sections. And then finally, in Section 3, the timelines for the bill summary has this wrong. The time frame for the eligible student to apply for the scholarship money is within two calendar years of the date of graduation. The governor had recommended one in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 4 that appears in the H2949DE5 amendment is language proposing to amend the way in which school performance report card information is portrayed, as well as some of the information. It's an attempt to make accessible on a single web page the information pertaining to schools and districts as well as state data in order to facilitate comparing the data related both to state information as well as local district information.
Mr. Chair, members, in Section 5, the statutory language for the Staff Development Revenue Program is modified. As committee members know, the reserve for staff development was suspended for the current biennium for fiscal years 12 and 13. What this language does is goes into the allocation method that was in statute and eliminates that current allocation method, which required 50% to go to the site, 25% on site-based grants, and 25% for district-wide activities.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 6 in this Delete Everything amendment is a bill that Representative Bills carried. It's a direction to school boards to develop and implement policies so that public school employees do not use public resources either to advocate or defeat a candidate for political office, advocate for passing or defeating a referendum question, or solicit funds for a political purpose. This language would not prohibit district employees from engaging in political activities and would not prohibit the use of public funds to disseminate information about local ballot questions if that information is factual. Mr. Chairman, members, Sections 7 to 11, 14, and 19 are all from a bill, House File 2025, that Representative Erdahl is carrying, having to do with expanding PSEO program options. The expansion covers specifically career and technical education in addition to academic courses. There is language encouraging participating school boards and eligible institutions to enter into an academic and career and technical education joint partnership with local or regional businesses or other entrepreneurs to help interested students pursue both academic and career and technical education courses. There is also some technical cleanup language in several of those sections. And perhaps most importantly, certainly for Representative Erdahl, there is a task force charged with further exploring how to better integrate career and technical education into the K-12 academic program.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 12 is connected to the early graduation program changes. Essentially, this eliminates language that deals with the reallocation of general education revenue for early graduates, since the early graduate will no longer generate general education revenue after the date of graduation. Section 13 is lease levy authority. Essentially, what this does is takes the authority that was considered in this committee for two school districts, the Faribault and the Wayzata school districts, and makes that authority available statewide so that a school district could use the building lease levy for administrative space as long as the school district could show to the commissioner's satisfaction that that space would be less expensive than renting instructional space. This provision, as I said, is statewide, but it would still require each district that sought to lease administrative space to go through the commissioner prior to doing so. Section 15 is the pay differential language from Representative Detmer's bill that was heard the other day. Essentially, what this language does is require that a school district put aside the salary savings for all of the employees who are deployed as a member of the National Guard or other reserves and use that to calculate the amount of supplemental payments, differential payments for those service members. The current law essentially makes that calculation on an individual employee-by-employee basis. Section 16 is Representative Quam's fund transfer provision. Essentially continues for two more years the authority for school districts to transfer funds among accounts and funds in the same manner that is currently allowed for fiscal years 12 and 13. Section 17, Mr. Chair, is language dealing with the Early Childhood Education Scholarship Program. There were several provisions that were heard in this committee related to that. Representative Anderson's provision to divide the money equally between the metro and non-metro areas is included in this. The language that was authored to allow the parent to determine who the program provider is included. And finally, Representative Loon's language regarding the grant for the parent-child home program for $250,000 is included as a rider on this language. Section 18 is a Representative House bill for Bemidji Pupil Transportation Grant. This is made as a one-time grant of $250,000. Ms. Larson has spoken to Section 19.
And Mr. Chairman, members, Section 20 is a direction to the Education Commissioner to report to the legislature by February 15, 2013 on a plan for fully implementing the federal waiver that Minnesota received for the No Child Left Behind Act. This would include a cost of or a summary of all costs and expenditures to date, as well as projected future costs for implementing that waiver.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 21 of the bill is the appropriations section. You'll see a technical amendment in a moment to move the Bemidji appropriation into this category. The appropriation essentially will adjust for the cost savings for the PSEO program as well as the early graduation scholarship program. Mr. Chair, members, there are two repealers, sets of repealers in the bill. The first of those listed in paragraph A in the bill are the repealers of the annual report that the Department of Management and Budget currently does on the amount of federal funding that may be withheld if the state were not to comply with NCLB requirements.
And Mr. Chairman, members, the second repealer is also part of Representative Erdahl's bill. It has to do with the ability of intermediate school districts to provide courses under PSEO programs.
Thank you. Members, we do have a quorum now, so we'll officially call this meeting to order. And Representative Greiling informs me that she's read the minutes from March 22nd and moves their approval. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. The chair will now move House File 2949 be recommended or passed and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And the chair will also move the DE5 amendment. Before we take testimony, I'd like to take up the amendments first, and then we'll move to the public testimony portion of this bill. So again, the chair moves the DE5 amendment. And first of all, I will also move the A3 amendment as an amendment to the amendment. This is a modification to the early graduation award so that it's 2 years instead of one. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Next is the Strom Amendment, the A6 Amendment. The chair will move the A6 Amendment. This moves the grant from one section of the bill to another to put it in the proper order. Any discussion?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mr. Representative Mary
I. I'm wondering if Representative Strom is offering an amendment and he ought to be explaining it.
I think I just did. But any discussion on the A6 Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A6 Amendment is adopted. The chair will move the A7 amendment. Members, what this does is this pays for the fiscal note and the digital learning bill that was passed by Representative Myra. It'll be carried in this bill. It's a $51,000 cost. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Now, those are the amendments that the author has. I have three amendments in my packet, the A1, A10, and A11 amendments. We'll start with the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney moves the A1 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually a fairly simple amendment. It asks the Department of Education to prepare one report that looks at the rigorous course-taking opportunities that are available for Minnesota students. The data on it does so by adding the PSEO options, concurrent enrollment, such alike, to the report that the department already does for AP and IB. The higher education institutions already have this data. They actually already report out this data. This data is publicly available on various websites in the state system. This simply puts it all together in one place so we as policymakers and others can see what the rigorous course-taking options are, who's taking them, how teachers are being trained, and the like. The department is supportive of this language, and the nice people who run the PSEO programs are also supportive.
How about the people who aren't nice?
And so is the chair for the Education Reform Committee. Nice people everywhere I look, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Erickson, the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee, I support this. This is an important piece of data that the department should be reporting to us.
Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. The A10 amendment. Representative Mariani moves the A10 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this language is also sitting in the department policy bill. And as much as I'd like to move the department policy bill, I have to say this is probably the one small provision that really has there's a real just reason on why we should move ahead with this. This has to do with a small group of students. I forget the number, but I think it's maybe around 200 students in the state who are the last folks that are required to pass the BST in order to attain their high school diploma. These students, many of frankly, who are immigrant students who came to us at a later stage of age, have not been successful in getting through the BST math, have been successful in every other way. But what happens, since we're phasing out the BST math, they're now going to be required to pass the tougher grad math in order to obtain their diplomas. And yet, as you know, a few years ago, we froze that requirement for a short period of time. Currently you have this cohort of students that are required to take the grad math test but don't have to pass it in order to obtain a diploma. And so what this language would do is just put them in the same under the same expectations of that group. You know, quite frankly, members, they're not going to, you know, chances of them passing the grad math, which is a tougher test than the BST math, are pretty low. And so this really just puts them in the same place that we have our other current students. I think it's a good, just thing for us to do to keep the education progress moving forward for these students in this state. And as I said, it's in the policy bill, the department policy bill, which is also sitting on the table here. I just want to really make sure that we do this little piece, if nothing else.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. This provision, as you said, is part of the department's policy bill, and we've invited the commissioner to come to this committee to walk through the other components of the policy bill. Thus far, we've not been able to reach an agreement on a time when the commissioner can come to this committee. And given that, I am reluctant to accept any provisions in that bill until the commissioner is available to come to our committee and testify, so I would oppose your amendment. Any further discussion on the A10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The A11 amendment. Representative Mariani moves the A11 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm with your indulgence, I'm going to take a little bit more time because this is a bigger piece. This is the Achievement and Integration for Minnesota program proposal that was prepared by the Integration Task Force that we authorized last year after the special session. I was a member of, full disclosure, I was a member of that task force, as was Senator Pam Wolf from the Senate. Currently, as you know, our integration program is focused on preventing segregation and encouraging interracial contact. And as you all know, that's rooted in deep American principles of equality, best captured in the Brown v. Board decision Supreme Court decision that said separate but equal is not acceptable for us as Americans. What's new about this is that it keeps that commitment to preventing segregation in our public schools, but it also does so by focusing very strongly on increasing academic achievement. This is the result of a bipartisan task force. As you recall, the governor was directed to appoint six members to that task force, and the speaker and the Senate Majority Leader then split up the other six between them, so presumably six Democrats and six Republicans. There were also, I just noticed this morning, I was preparing my notes, seven people of color on that task force. That's pretty unusual that the majority of the task force members were people of color appointed from both political communities. I was skeptical, quite frankly, that task force would come in with an agreement, and lo and behold, committed people who are focused on students can do remarkable things, and we came in with a 10 to 1 to 1. There were actually two minority reports, producing a powerful new frame that's captured in this amendment and in this bill. And it's truly a bipartisan, and I would argue, proposal. Last year, as I said, we sunsetted the integration revenue effective in the year 2000. The purposes for it, effective year 2014. We authorized the task force to bring a report back. We worked double time during the holiday season to make sure we can do that because we started pretty late. And reports were here to the legislature in mid-February. As of this date, we have yet to have a legislative hearing scheduled to receive that report, although the Senate did schedule an hour hearing to receive a report from the one of the minority reports that was written by Catherine Kirsten, who obviously did not agree with the majority of the members. The amendment basically modernizes our integration approach. It continues to pursue racial and economic integration by focusing on in-school practices and developing staff and teachers, or rather staff and parents to be full participants, but does so by increasing academic outcomes. It requires the districts to submit their plans to the Department of Ed, but frankly, the language provides much more guidance than we had in the past. You know, one of the critics of the past program is that sort of anything goes, you know, in those plans that the departments, or rather districts, submitted in the early years. I think that was certainly the case. This is much more descriptive and tied to, you know, strong academic achievement purposes. Districts have to set goals and they have to assess their goals. That's a whole new thing as well. They have to implement formative assessments to identify interventions directly focused on reducing achievement gaps. And they have to hold formal public hearings, which are not currently required to do, on their plans and report back to their communities on their progress in terms of both interracial contact but also achieving academic goals. The department must evaluate the plans, and then they have to report back to this committee and to our Senate counterpart specifically on how any of this is reducing achievement gaps. So, members, this is really pretty radical, pretty aggressive, pretty pointed and directed. It isn't the laissez-faire attitude that we had in the previous or in the current framework where the department was told to report back, but could be, you know, whether they did or not was irrelevant, and whether they were focusing on, and they certainly were not focusing on academic achievement. I'll close by saying that the funding mechanisms and elements of the bill is that, or the amendment, is that we're using the same money as in current law. So this is revenue neutral relative to our forecast, but we have some different formula pieces here that really get at the ability for us to spread our investment as a state to more districts around the state. You all know, many of you know, that racial diversity is only increasing across the state. When we first started this work many years ago, much of that was pretty limited to regional centers and to the two urban core. So there's a $10 per pupil incentive revenue. There's a $350 per pupil based on protected status part of the element. There's a grandfather provision here because we do have districts that have built up their infrastructure relative to the current participating districts. Part of our language last year was to do no harm to those districts. So there's a grandfather provision here, and then there's a real tough 5% loss provision here that says if you're not meeting your goals, District X, that you've designed, that we've prescribed, we've given you, A through D to choose from, then the state's going to withhold 5% of your revenue. I mean, this is tough stuff. This is accountability to the max. This is setting strong expectations from this legislature coming from a bipartisan group that says absolutely preventing segregation is important, but, frankly, academic achievement, raising academic achievement in that process is also important. And let me close by saying, Mr. Chair, that my own school district under the formula here loses a good chunk of change. I don't want them to lose a good chunk of change. I just as soon expand the pie here, but and so you're frankly not going to see too many members are going to come in with a bill that says, to you know, they're going to take a good chunk of change out of their own school district in pursuit of a bigger goal, in pursuit of making sure that we're providing opportunities all across the state. But that's what I'm willing to do in honor of the bipartisan agreement that this group came up with. I think Minnesota will be well served by it, and I'll just have to, you know, get beat up on my school board and my superintendent a little bit later for offering this amendment. So, Mr. Chair, I would strongly urge your support. I know this is big stuff. I know that we would rather spend a lot of time, you know, massaging the funding formula, talking through the principles at stake here. But I don't know why we would allow a future legislature, and we don't know who's going to, you know, who's going to be in that future legislature, to make the important decision that we've already directed a bipartisan group of folks to offer strong recommendations to us. We have the power to act now. I would encourage us to do so.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Just a couple of thoughts before we go to additional member questions and comments. First of all, there's one point that you made that I'm in complete agreement with, and that is that we shouldn't just wait to see how the elections turn out and let a future legislature work on this. We're in negotiations with the Senate right now about conducting a joint hearing, and that's something that I want to accomplish this have a hearing and have a, you know, a full hearing on the task force recommendations, where we were, where we are, and where we potentially could go. So on that matter, please don't feel that, that's something that is a choice between this or nothing, because we are going to have hearings and work on this later on in this committee. Second of all is that while you did, within this amendment, you did withhold to, or you did follow the task force recommendations, you did, there were some cubes that needed to be filled in. For example, the withholding of funds, the task force recommendation, if I remember right, simply said to withhold funds. I don't believe the 5% set aside was set in there. That's sort of an author's intent going into it. But third and finally is I want to make sure that we have a full hearing on this issue, that we discuss it thoroughly, and I don't think an amendment to this bill right now is the proper way to do that. So I will be opposing the A11 amendment. I can call on Representative Greiling, or I can go back to you, Representative Mariani. It's up to you.
I can wait for Representative Greiling.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When are we having this hearing?
Representative Greiling, as I stated, we're in negotiations with the Senate. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think the hearing is going to be a day late and a dollar short. You know, maybe I'm wrong, and everybody in the rumor mill around here that thinks we're adjourning early, maybe they'll be wrong, and we'll have this hearing and we'll act on it this year. But when you said that it's important that we deal with it this year, don't kick the can down the road again, which we've been doing for years and years and years, and not deal with it until after the election, I'm assuming that you meant deal with it this year, not just have a hearing on it, Mr. Chair?
Representative Greiling, I would certainly want to have a hearing on it. In terms of taking action, it would be dependent upon a majority of the committee and the testimony we receive. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you may or may not know that the Democrats were entertaining having a hearing on this just so we could have an informational hearing and hear from the public and have more informed debate here when we got around to this bill. But then when I was at the Parents United debate with you, or a forum where they were asking us questions, you said we were going to hear the bill. And so I think took that on more good faith than I should have. I'm thinking of when we hear a bill, we hear it before the train has left the station. If you do it afterwards, as we all know around here, that then means you are waiting until next year. You're getting the topic out there, you're discussing it, but you're not going to do anything this year. And that concerns me hugely. It concerns me that we're now marking up a second omnibus bill and we're still haven't heard this important topic that has been on the table for quite a while. You know, when Representative Mariani and the others on the task force embarked on this task, I, with quite a bit of confidence, predicted that they would fail to come up with anything. I thought they would not be able to agree, and I was wrong about that, and it's just amazing that they came to agreement, that they have this really, I think, very fine and wonderful report. And so I just have to say it's a great failing, I believe, on the part of this committee to not be entertaining this amendment right now, which would keep it alive for in the real bills, for the real discussion. You can always ditch it later. You could keep it in here. I would urge us to put it in here and then have the hearing on it as soon as possible. I'm glad we're going to do that. I hope it's going to be this week. And then continue discussing it. But I guess I don't like the process of, you know, getting things in or not in, and then we have hearings and conference committees or other places. This is the committee, this is the Education Finance Committee, where we should be vetting this thoroughly, and it's really late now. But I think it's just a tragedy that we aren't acting on this, that you're not entertaining putting it in the bill, that we haven't heard it up until this point, and I think it's astoundingly good work that everybody but Catherine Kirsten, who, and not a lot pleases her when it comes to putting a dime into integration funding, that the others, including former Representative Myron Orfield, came to agreement on this. And so I'd like some more clarity about the timing of bills. You know, is this the last omnibus bill? It's going to conference, I'm assuming, Mr. Chair, on what you're in negotiating with the Senate. But if let's pretend you were king of the world.
Why pretend?
Well, okay then. You ought to be able to answer this question. If you are king of the world, we won't pretend. When are we hearing? When would you like to have this hearing? And what is your intent, never mind about the Senate, for this proposal, this A11 amendment? Sure. Are you planning to act on it this year? Do you support acting on it this year?
Sure. Well, Representative Greiling, the again, we prefer to work, collaborate with the Senate, but in the event that the Senate is not willing to or is unable to reach an agreement with us on when this would be scheduled, I'm in favor of us having a hearing on the bill independently in the House. So there will be a hearing on it in terms of the motion of whether it would this committee would pass it, whether we would lay it over. That's going to be up to the author of the bill and the majority of the committee. But I'm willing to reserve judgment on that until we've received public testimony, until we've learned of the author's intent on that. Representative Garland.
Here then, I'll ask again. I've asked in many ways, but what is your preference for when we would have this hearing? If you were scheduling it, would it be this week? Be in on the train that's going out of the station
Before the Easter recess, Representative Garland. So this week or next week? So before the Easter recess.
And then, Mr. Chair, is it your caucus's preference to pass something like this year or anything?
Representative Greiling, that's going to be the will of the committee, and it's going to be dependent upon public testimony and the authors. I would not presume to speak for the will of this committee. Representative Greiling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I can speak for our caucus, and I bet you have a good sense of yours. We would strongly like to do something this year, and I think while we have such an altruistic author of this amendment who's thinking of the greater good for the topic of integration and how it interplays with achievement, never mind about what it does to his own district, that we're really missing an opportunity not to take this amendment seriously today.
Oh, Representative Greiling, I'm taking the amendment seriously. That's why I think we need a full committee hearing on it, and without taking public testimony on such an important action. So, any other additional comments, Representative Greiling?
I will defer now to Representative Mariani, who's waiting in line.
Well, we're going to defer to Representative Downey because he's next on the list, but then we can go to Representative Mariani from there. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe just a process question. And so is it your intention that we'll have a thorough discussion of the Mariani amendment at some future time? I'd be glad to offer some comments here today, but if the intent is to have an entire hearing, I'm glad to pass and save my comments for later, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Downey, it's the Chair's intent that we're going to have a thorough review of the task force recommendations, that we're going to hear from the task force. The vehicle for doing that will be the Chair's plan right now is the Mariani bill. But so, yeah, there's no need for an exhaustive conversation on this because it will be taking place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass then.
Representative Mariani.
No, well, Mr. Chair, members, obviously the it's a prerogative of the majority to move forward in the way that it wants to. It's your responsibility to manage, the flow of legislation. I've been a chair. I understand that, too. But I would say this, and maybe this just sort of comes with getting older, but, there are several times, as I look back in my tenure here, where I wish I could have made a different call. And the truth of the matter, I think, in our processes here is that sometimes our processes wind up dictating what it is that we do as opposed to our better judgment of what needs to be done out in society. And I'm not questioning your judgment, Mr. Chair. I'm just saying that we have the power not to allow ourselves to be the victims of process. We have a committee deadline this weekend, this Friday. I can see all sorts of bureaucratic, technocratic arguments that your leadership, that the Senate, will make on why we should do nothing at all and just sort of comfortably, you know, walk away from an incredible body of work that was really put together by just a remarkable group of people in that created a space that's pretty rare nowadays. They created a bipartisan space and an environment, political environment, where that's, you know, most of us are not rewarded for doing that. And I obviously you're going to do what you want to do. I know you have a plan here, but I think you're running the risk of not doing anything this legislative session. A few years from now, as perhaps, hopefully not, things don't get better in terms of achievement gap issues and interracial understandings, you know, for our modern society, I hope we're not asking ourselves, why didn't I take that little step when I could have? There's nothing that we can't do in our process going forward that doesn't allow us to ditch this amendment. We should play safe, make sure it's on the table. And frankly, as a House member, I don't really much care what the Senate cares to do. I mean, you know, our job, as you know, is to frankly exert the people's wisdom, you know, on that body. And you can bet that they're going to be approaching you, as you well know, with the same attitude. So, you know, obviously you're in a majority. You can do what you wish to do. All I can do is offer the opportunity for us. And the opportunity is here for us to take.
Representative Mary, on your point with the Senate, on that, we can agree. Any additional discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A11 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. No. Aye. The amendment is not adopted. That is the DE5 amendment. So now, members, we will. This is the DE5 amendment as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The DE5 amendment as amended is adopted. Members will now move to public testimony on the bill as amended. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. Mr. Chairman, just a couple of quick comments. First of all, we appreciate some of the changes in the Early Graduation Achievement Scholarship Program. My clients, the secondary principals, wanted me to make sure that if this program came up again, to tell you that What Mr. Strom describes in the bill summary as savings actually come out of our high school budgets. So these students that graduate early during the year, our costs remain the same during the year. We can't lay people off mid-year. And this varies significantly from school to school in terms of the numbers of early graduates. Some schools might just have a handful, but some may have as many as 25. This is going to end up to be a significant budgetary thing at our high school level, and so it's a concern. We just wanted to put it out there. But you are funding the scholarship program out of our high school budgets. I was thinking of this as an analogy. If somebody leaves the play early, even though there's an empty seat there, we still have to continue to show the play for the rest of the evening. The same is true with the high school. If we lose two kids out of a senior high school class, we still have to offer that class and still have that same cost with the teacher for the rest of the year. It's unfortunate the way funding works, but this will have an impact on our high schools as this goes forward. Two other things that relate to the PSEO programs that are identified in here. One is that you've deleted the provision that prohibits the post-secondary institutions from advertising, soliciting, or recruiting on financial grounds. That provision was in the bill, but it was deleted in the Higher Ed Committee, and some other language was put in there. It's Representative Erdahl's bill, House File 2025. That came back to the committee, but the language that's in here is not the language that came back from Higher Ed. The issue was debated quite a bit about whether the higher ed should be allowed to advertise, solicit, or recruit. They do provide quite a bit of information about the financial aspects of this program. After the bill went through, we did look at the University of Minnesota's website, which contains a statement that the costs for tuition and required textbooks are subsidized by the state of Minnesota. So, and interestingly enough, the Minsky, as I'm informed, testified at the in the higher ed committee that they actually were neutral on this provision. So you might want to think about that as that goes on. I know there are some people that think that that advertising should take place, but we resist that. And then finally, there's some discussion in the PSEO that sections of the bill, which I think are Section 7, there's language that talks about non-sectarian academic and career and technical courses. Our understanding as the bill had progressed before was that that was more of a clarification than an expansion of the program. And these classes and the eligibility for these classes are determined by the post-secondary institutions. We don't make decisions on that. And so, Mr. Chair, if it is a different expansion than that, that's something we probably would like to discuss. But it occurs to us that based on the other variations of the bill, that that's what that is. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I guess on the amendment here, just wanted to thank you all for bringing this forward. There were two issues that were brought forward in the governor's supplemental education bill that attempted to just do some clarifying fixes. We want to appreciate the inclusion of the early graduation scholarship language, although it was switched. It gets to the premise of clarifying how the scholarships are used, how long the implementation plan will work, as far as when the student or when the student or the military person would indicate if they're using the program. It is really helpful for the clarification language in there. Obviously, we had heard some concerns from school districts regarding the literacy aid and how that money was allocated last session, and so we tried to bring some of that language forward, and that language is not included. A couple of the other things that we just wanted to point out that we look forward to continue working, but we do have some concerns on the school performance report cards. The issue we have here is it's dealing with adequate yearly progress, which was part of the previous No Child Left Behind federal law. And also in our waiver, we also have the multiple measurements rating that includes proficiency, it includes growth, it includes the achievement gap, and as well as the graduation rate. And I think one of the issues we just wanted to raise here is that by having by outlining these in the report card with adequate yearly progress, it might be confusing to parents and to students as to what the report card will look like. In Section 17, this is an issue that we've raised before on the early childhood education scholarships that we've outlined before. We did put forward our implementation plan. I understand that you all, there are some concerns with that, but we prefer to go forward with the plan connected to quality for early childhood scholarships. There's a issue in Section 20. There's a No Child Left Behind waiver implementation report. I realize that you did delete the other No Child Left Behind report. One of the issues just to raise in this is that the funds that come forward through this waiver are all Title I funds, so they're all federal funds. So the department will continue to act the way it has acted before with federal funds, as well as the districts will be doing the same. The implementation and what the districts, that may change a little bit, but it's still the exact same amount of money. We can look, work with you on this and to see exactly what it is that you'd like in this report. But those were just a few of the concerns we wanted to raise, and appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And Mr. McHenry, just a quick heads up on a couple of things. One, as you know, the current scholarships are for $4 million in fiscal year 13, and then it ramps down to $2 million in fiscal years 14 and 15. It obviously, from a planning sense, makes no sense to give people a scholarship, give students a scholarship for 1 year, and then to discontinue that scholarship eligibility for half the participants in the next fiscal year. So I look forward to working with the governor and the department on, it seems like a pretty easy problem they could fix. Second of all, with regards to Section 20 of the bill and the report, you are correct that the distribution of funds is Title I funding. However, the commissioner's been going around the state talking about the waiver, and I don't think those are coming out of Title I funds, are they?
Mr. Chair, members, the commissioner does do a lot of school visits, whether it's dealing with the No Child Left Behind waiver, whether it's dealing with the adopt-a-school issue, whether it's dealing with what goes on here at the Capitol as well. And I think that's it's an outreach thing that the commissioner does as well as the department to keep the schools updated as best possible. So that's part of may not be just specifically just on the NCLB waiver of why she's been to other schools, but there are several issues that she does cover when she's visiting our schools.
Thank you very much, Mr. McHenry.
Thank you.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Welcome to the committee. The chair will note that purple is his favorite color.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Great way to start out the morning, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. We've got five quick...
Can you please state your name for the record? Sorry.
Thank you. Grace Kelleher. I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We have five quick concerns. We, as Mr. Aronson already shared, we have concerns about the advertiser position in the higher ed bill. And in this bill, we really like the higher ed solution better than the language within this bill. So we hope the committee considers that going forward. We're concerned about the military pay differential. Once again, members, this is something that only school districts would have to pay, and not other local governments. So cities and counties would not have to do this. I just think uneven implementation is very difficult and makes the community at large frustrated with the process when we have one local government treating military personnel one way, other local governments treating them another. We are concerned the literacy aid is not in here. We've had members, big and small, having issues with how that funding flows through. It's next year, and we hope you appreciate or find a solution there and clarify where that money goes and how it rolls out. The early graduation language in here is beneficial, and I want to thank the committee for putting that in here. But that is a cost to our school districts, and as Mr. Aronson so eloquently stated, two kids out of a high school class, those are two empty chairs that we don't get to lay off the teacher mid-session, and our costs we're going to have to eat. And last but not least, leaving on a high note, Representative Loon's 25-25-50 removal is in this bill, and we appreciate that inclusion, Mr. Chairman. With
and
that,
what was your third point? I just wrote these down here, but I missed the third one.
The literacy aid, we'd really like that to be addressed in some form to clarify how that rolls out for school.
And do you prefer how it's fixed? Do you support the governor's recommendation, or what is there in general?
Mr. Chairman, we're relatively open as long as you are clear and accurate, but we've had questions from our membership, big as well as small school districts, confused about how it will be counted, how the money will flow, and how much money will flow out, and it is in next year's budget. So some language there would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any additional members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Nathan, and I'll be brief. Since comments have been made about the opportunity for colleges and universities to share accurate information with the public, I'd like to note that as a former public school teacher and administrator, a former PTA president, former member of the state PTA Association, I've been deeply involved. My name is Joe Nathan. I'm from the Center for School Change. I've been deeply involved in these issues for 30 years, and I think it's terrific that on a bipartisan basis, the House has decided to move ahead in allowing colleges and universities to do what high schools have been able to do for a quarter century. Also, and some of you had a chance to hear this testimony, some of you did not, but in several earlier hearings, the following organizations testified in favor
of the provision that now has been inserted. So I want to commend you. The following organizations included: the African American Leadership Forum, Growth and Justice, Minnesota Business Partnership, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, McGeezy, which is an organization that works extensively with Native American students, Growth and Justice, and a variety of other groups. So I think that there is considerable support for your position, and I thank you for including it.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Any additional public testimony? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony portion of the bill and move to member comments and questions. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this bill going to taxes?
No, it is not. It's going to Ways and Means.
And, Mr. Chair, why isn't it going to taxes? It does.
Representative Greiling, because there's no changes in tax policy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know. Maybe Chair Davids is not very fussy, but when Chair Lencheski was there, this bill certainly, because it does have levy impacts, would have gone to taxes. So I just want to register that. I think it is a good policy for K-12 bills to routinely go to taxes when there are changes in levies.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Any additional comments or questions from members of the committee? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few sections I either want to ask some questions of clarification or have some comments on. The first is Section 4 of the bill, the language around the report card. Ms. Larson.
I'm sorry, Representative Bryant, what section of the bill is this?
Section 4 of the bill. It's. I'm looking particularly at page 4, lines 21 through 29. That elucidate the exact description of the report card as it's requested to move forward. When Ms. Larson testified on this section, my impression was that these descriptors are all intended to relate to data that is currently already supplied by the department or available. However, line 425 uses the phrase growth-based performance index, which is a phrase that is not currently defined in legislation. So I'm asking for some clarification about intent and definition.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, I believe that the local growth-based performance index is an effort to include those examples where school districts have set local targets for growth based upon locally administered assessments.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what I'd ask Ms. Larson is the effective date on this section is 2012-2013, and I'm going to ask if these indexes actually currently exist. I don't know them to exist, and I don't know of any clear definition of that phrase, growth-based performance index, whereas every other term in here has a definition in statute. This one does not.
Ms. Larson, no question there, just a statement, Representative Brainard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm very concerned about that. I think that it's problematic to the first of all, I'm going to ask this. I don't know if Ms. Larson can clarify this or if you as the author can clarify this. Is the intent here to communicate data that is already available either through the department or through local districts, or are we making reference to bodies of data yet to be organized?
Representative Briner, the intent of this is to increase disclosure and transparency for parents. In terms of new data, this does not mandate any new assessment. It does not go outside it's silent on those topics. Certainly what local school boards decide to do and the creation of local growth-based measurements the intent would be to include it but not mandate it. Representative Briner.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I won't belabor the point, but I think in the rest of that, the section of statute that this relates to, there's been great effort to be very clear about exactly what data is being referred to. And I do clearly understand the goal of this section in terms of easily accessible and understood. I believe the data was initially offered in that manner, And there's been some changes to that, and the department really hasn't either chosen or had the opportunity to testify on the changes to their website. So I do understand the broad intent here, but I'm very concerned that we're clear about what data we're referring to, especially with an effective date of 2012. Now, you say it's permissive. I'll take that in goodwill, but I just have a caution about the lack of a definition of that term in statute.
Any additional comments or questions from the committee? Representative Briner?
Well, that was just my first section.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Larson has some, I don't know if she's going to offer something on that.
Representative Briner, did you have a follow-up?
I'm letting Section 4 go for the moment. I don't know what was offered there, but Section 17 is the next section I simply want to comment on, and I did comment when we took testimony on that bill. And my main concern there is, I understand the high standards of the program that is being offered the grant. This still, nevertheless, appears to me to be a carve-out or an earmark, and I think it's not the best way to deliver early childhood aid throughout the state, identifying a particular program without allowing a competitive opportunity for other programs to participate or compete for those same dollars. So that's my next section. And my last section is Section 20, which has already been discussed by the department, but my concern is we're seeking a report on the cost of the waiver to No Child Left Behind. There's nothing in the delineation of the section to indicate that we would balance that cost against the cost that would be incurred should we proceed normally with No Child Left Behind, as we would be obligated by law to do without the waiver. And I think without that context, those costs may be inappropriately interpreted.
Representative Briner, that's a fair point that I should consider, is that maybe if we expand the report to include what the department perceives as the savings of the waiver in addition to the cost, I think that's a reasonable point. And Representative Briner, I don't think in your comments about the scholarship you made a very eloquent case. You weren't talking about the Head Start program, were you, in terms of the non-competitive nature of it? You're talking about just the scholarship portion, Representative Briner?
Mr. Chair, I'm totally open to that discussion, but I'm talking particularly about the language included here. I am a strong believer in research-based, standards-driven decisions, and I think a competitive grant process is a much more appropriate way to deliver dollars.
Thank you, Representative Briner. We've got Representative Anderson and then Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a concern about schools losing revenue from the early graduation things. But the question I had, Mr. Chairman, if a student, for example, had an online course and graduated or had enough credits to graduate a couple of weeks into a new semester, are these rigid guidelines a semester, a trimester, as far as the early graduation? Or if they're a week or two into a new semester and pass an online course to fulfill graduation requirements, are these timelines rigid?
Representative Anderson, I'll defer to staff on this, but I believe the answer on that is going to be for the purposes of the early graduation scholarship amounts, those are a rigid deadline. So, for example, if you were halfway, if a student was halfway through their final semester, that would be a rigid guideline. But in terms of a student just deciding in their final semester that they're done, they don't need to go anywhere, that at that point they would no longer be in the system. But I would defer to Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom if that's an accurate or inaccurate answer on my part.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Mr. Aronson or the school boards may wish to comment on this as well. But currently under the early graduations statute, and this language is in the first part of Section 1, the early graduation occurs with the approval of local school officials. So I am not sure how that works when there is a credit that's required through an online program. But in terms of the counting of general education revenue, currently that's paid for everyone other than the early graduating seniors. That's paid for the number, essentially for the number of days the student attends. So when a student stops attending, except for the early graduation exception, they stop being counted for general education revenue.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relates kind of like to what Representative Anderson talked about as far as the concern of loss of revenue. And I wasn't, I had to step out for a constituent during Ms. Kelleher's testimony. Mine relates to a loss of revenue for PSEO. And I don't know if she addressed that or not. You know, do you know, are the school boards on board or for the potential loss of revenue by expanding to 9th and 10th grade options to students in this in the state?
Yeah, Representative Ward, we don't have the I'll let Ms. Larson tell you. Ms. Larson, did you want to state that just so it can come from the chair or Ms. Larson? So the 9th and 10th grade provisions are not in this bill, Representative.
Okay. Section 19 doesn't address that at all then?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Ward, you are correct. That is the task force, and that is one of the questions posed to the task force. But there is no proposal in the House bill to amend the law to include younger students at this time.
Okay, thank
Representative
you.
Ward.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'd just like to be on record then, Mr. Chair, that I have had two of my school districts' boards come to me and ask that if and when that becomes a pretty serious dialogue, that they are not in favor of expanding to 9th and 10th grade for a number of reasons, but one of them being significantly financial. It's not unlike Representative Anderson and I remember, was that last year or 2 years ago, we were on a bill together, a bipartisan bill together, that that was a college and schools provision that allowed 9th and 10th graders to take a college and schools provision to fill the class out within the school. Very good bill on both of our parts that you know did move, but I just want to be on record that you know that some of my school districts in my area have opposed expansion of PSEO to a 9th and 10th graders. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I should have been paying attention earlier when Representative Reiner raised her first point, which had to do with Section 4, I believe, of the bill on page 4. And I did, when I was reviewing with the lead all amendment yesterday, I had similar questions, you know, on line 4.25, where we talk about a state and local growth-based performance index and whether or not we were actually referring to a specific animal or creature that exists already in statute, or if we were just using that as a phrase, a term. And I do think it's important, Mr. Chair, members, that we, unless we do have a reference somewhere else in statute, that we at least clarify intent as the bill goes forward. And I'm wondering if perhaps Representative Briner, who's really kind of been a major point person here. I know this is not your language. I'm going to put you on the spot, Representative Briner, but I'm wondering if you can tell us what you think state and local growth-based performance index is, unless the chair or someone else, you know, has a definition. But I don't think we've had that defined yet.
Well, Representative Mariani and Representative Briner, as you saw, Ms. Larson came back with a suggestion. I'm willing to work with Representative Briner on that going forward so that we meet the author's intent of it. Representative Briner, did you want to add any comments?
Just briefly, according to current measures, I think the appropriate phrase would be a value-added growth model. But I'd be glad to discuss with you your intent here and see if we could clarify that.
And just while the chair's thinking about this, Ms. Larson, if we could please have an amendment drafted, not today, but for in the future committee, on the Representative Briner's point regarding the No Child Left Behind, so that we do know not just the costs of the waiver, but also the savings impacted. And if we can get the amendment drafted so we can take it up in Ways and Means and put that on there, that's a fair point.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the spirit in which you're moving forward on this issue in terms of making sure that we're clear on the language here.
Thank you. Any additional questions from members of the committee? Representative Erickson and Greiling and Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in response to Representative Reinert's concern about the line 425, the local growth-based performance, considering the fact that the department has just recently sent a memo to school districts to inform them that in this next year's testing, they must, at least they're encouraged to test three times, and it's for purposes of growth, and even children who may be proficient on the first testing are expected, as I read the memo, to take it a second and third times because the department wants this growth measure, and of course part of that is for the waiver. So I think, you know, as you work on that, be sure we're checking with the department, because I really have concerns about what the memo said, and we want to clarify that. Representative
Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I appreciate that comment, and I do think there's a need to clarify that. I just took, in terms of the language of this section, line 428 says, display any accountability measures or ratings required by federal law or a federally approved waiver of that law. So I thought that language would cover whatever variation on the growth measure would occur as the waiver rolls out. And so I just didn't... I just like terms to be defined, and that phrase, growth-based performance index, is without definition. So that's my level of discomfort there. Thank you.
Representative Erickson?
No, that's good. I think we agree that maybe there's a question on the board index.
Okay. Representative Greiling, and then Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice, even though this is a finance bill, I did not get, unless others did, a tracking sheet in my handout, but I did...
I think you should have one.
Did other people get one? Oh, all right. Okay, well, all the better then. I did have one ahead of time, and I understand that the tracking sheet then that others got that I got ahead, but not in my packet unless I missed it, is based on your bill passing where the shift is accelerated or the payments are accelerated, so the shift. Become smaller. And I'm wondering if that does not pass, then what are the plans for funding this bill? Because looking at the two sheets, especially post-secondary enrollment options, you know, if the shift is accelerated, the payback, then it saves $230,000. But if it doesn't pass, if that bill doesn't pass, and we know the governor's not exactly looking like he's going to sign that bill, then it costs $41,000. You know, it's not big amounts, but I wonder what are your contingency plans for funding this bill should the other bill not pass?
Well, Representative Greiling, you should be more positive. You were negative on the task force recommendations, and they came through, and you say we're not going to hear the integration bill, and I say we are going to hear it, and maybe the governor is going to sign that bill. You should be more positive. But Representative Greiling, and we'll defer to Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow on this, my understanding is that should that not be enacted into law, and if you go snap back to the 64.3 on the shift versus 70.2, that's going to reduce the savings in this bill by roughly $300,000. So we would still, the funding would still, in terms of paying for it, would still meet its target. But Mr. Strom, Mr. Crow, is that correct, or do you have additional comments?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, the $300,000 is spread over the first 2 years, and obviously you all know there haven't been budget targets, but even with that additional $300,000 of spending, the bill would be under base, so it wouldn't run afoul of any targets that don't really exist, I guess, at this point.
Great answer. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll try to be positive on the governor signing your bill, and that kind of forces us to have to deal with the lack of money, and maybe we'll raise taxes after I'm gone, and you'll be wanting to do it too, because you'll notice that then we really have huge holes in our budget. But I haven't heard the governor being real positive. I guess what my question now is then, what are the discussions on the lack of targets that are public, at least? Do you expect to have any kind of a target if there are savings here to spend it, or are you planning on getting any amount of money if you do need it eventually?
Representative Greiling, any bill that spends money has to be approved by a majority of the Ways and Means Committee. This is similar to the answer I gave Representative Carlson on the House floor. And so the first omnibus bill and the second omnibus bill, whether there are targets or not, has to be approved by the Ways and Means Committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And of course, Representative Carlson knows that, and of course, I do too. So I consider that a non-answer. And so you don't know if you're going to have a target or not, or you just aren't telling.
Well, Representative Greiling, this term, you know, a target, you know, it's an official or unofficial. At the end of the day, with a target or absent a target, the bill has to pass the Ways and Means Committee. So whether we have a target or not is candidly irrelevant. What matters is the actions that the Ways and Means Committee takes. Representative Greiling.
Well, I'll just say I protest that answer as well. I just think it's very, very poor process and poor openness in government for not only other legislative members not to know it. Maybe you don't know either, so that's really poor process. But if you do know, it's not good form not to share it with the minority. And for all of us, not to have the public know, I think, is not good government. But I will leave it at that. I can see that you're not going to answer that question. And then I will just make my closing comments then about this bill in general. And I will be voting no. I'm glad that the PSEO, at least some remnants of it, are in the bill. I think that is progress. And there's some other smaller things that I think are good things. But in general, I'm voting no on it because of the bad precedent of the Loon bill. I think I covered that extensively in the last hearing. But I just think taking money out of one pot of money for little kids to give to another and then abandoning any assurance of quality control for how that money is spent is an awful move. So that's, I think, the worst thing in this bill. I also don't support the Bills bill. I think we should be encouraging parents and teachers and others to be politically active. I think it was amended down so it doesn't do as much harm, but then it doesn't really do much. So to make a statement that like that, I think, casts a pallor on the voices that we need to hear here at the Capitol, and they need to organize and get us to do better for students. And so I just think that one is a very bad commentary on what we should want to hear from those people here. And then, as Mr. Aronson and Ms. Kelleher said, there's actually a cut to education in this bill when you consider that school districts have to pay for students who end up leaving early. And we want to encourage students being able to do that and not penalize the students who are left behind. So I think that change in this bill, I would consider it a cut to education. I'll be able to talk about that, Mr. Chair. So
You can talk about it, but it's the governor's proposal, so good luck with that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Greiling,
you know I don't always like everything that the governor proposes or all of his things that he signs. So my statements have always been independent of others, and this is one of those. And so on that basis of these points, I will be voting no, and I hope that others join me.
I'm going to miss you next year, Representative Greiling. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been talking to Northwest superintendents and just want you to know that they appreciate that the 9th and 10th graders are not in the PSEO. That's something that was important to them. And they do have a few concerns about the early graduation stuff. But thank you.
Thank you. Any additional comments from members of the committee? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask a question of Representative Greiling, if she'll indulge me. And I acknowledge your concerns about that section, but could you just refresh for me? It's my understanding you don't actually support the scholarships for the early education period. So is that still the case, or you've had a change of heart on that?
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, no, I strongly oppose the scholarships, but I also oppose taking money out of them to give to another entity, which is also early childhood kids. And the place that it's going, there will not be the quality control of the quality, will not be the quality control of the quality ratings. The one thing I do like about the scholarships is the quality ratings. I've always supported the parent aware, the quality ratings. I just don't support the vouchers for little kids. They're two very separate things.
Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for answering my question, because I just, again, I'm maybe you and I should have a conversation offline. I have a hard time tracking the opposing the scholarships and feeling like we're taking money, but yet you would support, I think, directing that money to specific programs like Head Start and that. So maybe you and I should have a long conversation about early childhood.
I would suggest a bottle of wine as well. Worked for Representative Greiling and I in the past, right? So any additional conversations or topics? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion to have House File 2949 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The motion is adopted. Members, that completes our agenda for today's hearing. Please stay tuned for future scheduling. We'll send out an announcement about tomorrow, about whether we're going to have a hearing or not. But we'll just stay tuned as we time of the year where the schedule is flexible. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.